Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's podcast is sponsored by the people at Aura.com. Now, Aura offers identity theft protection, fraud monitoring, a VPN, password management, and antivirus software all in one easy-to-use app. This means that if your online accounts or passwords are leaked online, you'll be alerted quickly, which means that you can be secure from hackers, scammers, and noisy advertising companies. The narcissists are everywhere. Literally, a friend of mine signed up and Aura found his passwords 9 times on the dark web. So go to Aura.com/Dr. Carter. That's Aura.com/Dr. Carter. And use my link and you'll receive a free 14-day trial. And if you continue, then you'll be able to save an additional 40% off all plans. So thanks to the people at Aura.com for sponsoring this episode.
Welcome back to the Surviving Narcissism podcast with your host, Dr. Les Carter. I'm Michaela, the program director, and in today's episode, Dr. Carter is joined by Dr. Nadine Macaluso to discuss breaking free from trauma bonds.
Hey, Team Healthy. Well, you know, I like to bring some very interesting interviews in to our Surviving Narcissism podcast. And this one is going to kind of take the cake, I think. Nadine Macaluso, first of all, thank you for being here and for being a part of our broadcast. I'm so happy to have you with us today.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here as well.
Well, okay. So we're going to kind of get into why you're speaking into this topic that we're going to be talking about. And people may not know your name, not everybody anyway, some already do because of your presence online, but they'll kind of know who you are when we reference a movie that features your character. It's the Wolf of Wall Street. When did that come out? About 11, 12 years ago, something like that?
That came out, it's exactly 10 years ago.
Oh, 10 years ago?
Yes, okay. 10 years ago, The Wolf of Wall Street.
Okay, and it featured Leonardo DiCaprio and actually Margot Robbie. And Margot Robbie played the role that was you.
Correct. Okay. Yes, yep, she played me.
Okay, so that's our very brief backdrop. You were a young lady way back in the day, 22 years old, when you met this very difficult person. And yes. You wound up getting swept up in all of the dysfunction. And when I say dysfunction, I mean, you probably could write the book on that one. And then we're going to try to find out what it did to you and all. And interestingly, I know you told me off camera here that you got away from him 30, 31, something like that. And at age 39, you wound up going back to graduate school and getting your PhD in psychology. And now you're an expert on trauma bonding. You're in your mid-50s at this point, so you have quite a bit of space between back then and now, and a lot of time to grow and mature and understand all of that. So let's just do this. Tell us your story, and then what you found going on inside of you and what it did to you, and then we're going to go and we're going to talk about the book that you have that relates to this. And by the way, just for reference, the book that Nadine has, it's called Run Like Hell, And I know that when you hear the story, you're going to understand why she picked that that topic or that that title. So, Nadine, talk to us about where you've been.
Sure. So my ex-husband is the Wolf of Wall Street, Jordan Belfort. And yes, as you're mentioning, you know, Margot Robbie played me in that movie that was featured 10 years ago. But the story goes ways back. So I met my ex-husband, the Wolf, when I was living in New York City at 22 years old, and I was modeling in New York City and traveling around the world and making money and doing what young models do in New York, going to clubs and having tons of fun. And my boyfriend at the time said, you know, there's a great party in the Hamptons on the beach, so why don't we go to this party? And we go to the party, and little did I know that that night would change my life forever, because that's when I walked into my ex-husband's house. And I met him for the first time, as they show in the movie. She goes to the party with her boyfriend, and that's where we met. Now, he was married at the time.
Was he significantly older than you?
No, he was 28.
Okay.
Only 5 years. Yeah, only 5 years older than me. And so I didn't see him, though, for many months after that, because I was traveling. Actually, I was going to Chicago and doing a few other things, modeling. And then we did end up seeing each other 6 months later at the gym. And he said to me, you know, I'm separated. I have an apartment in the city. So we went on a first date, and then that was it. The rest, as they say, is history.
The rest is history. Well, yeah. The movie shows that this guy and all of the minions around were just, obviously they were driven by a lot of greed, but then it went way beyond that. Entitlement and debauchery and all the rest. What was that all about?
You know, it was just sheer madness. And at 22 years old, now I'm 23 when we got married, because it's like typical in a trauma bond, I was really love bombed. There were big trips and gifts and $15,000 in cash and, you know, a crazy watch, a Cartier watch that was up at my house. And it was really fast and furious. And it was just that was the way those guys lived. It was either big or go home. And like you say, they were very entitled. And I had never seen anything like that before. So it was kind of like I stepped into an unknown land. I was in a whole new territory. And it was quite overwhelming.
What do you think it was that made you so vulnerable to getting sucked into that world in the first place? I mean, you were very young and probably still trying to figure out who you were.
Correct. Yeah, I think, well, there are a few things going on. First of all, my ex-husband is probably the most charismatic, charming salesman you've ever met in your life. I don't know many people who can resist him. Second of all, I had grown up poor in Brooklyn with a single mother, and the money certainly was very alluring. And as we know, when you have connected to money is power, right? So I don't know that I was really feeling my own power as a 22-year-old girl, which is fine. And I think I was very attracted to his power. And I fell in love. I mean, I was a young girl who actually just simply fell in love.
So he was way into the using of people and just, like I say, it's just all about entitlement and self-indulgence, that form of narcissism, would you say?
Yes. And the way I talk about it too is that I say that sort of person, well, now I can say it, I didn't know then, will use, exploit, betray, and harm anyone and everyone to get their needs met for money, power, pleasure, and status.
Okay, so say that again, will you? Because you just said a mouthful.
So they will use, exploit, betray, and harm anyone to get their needs met for money, power, pleasure, and status.
Yeah. Okay.
It's that simple.
And of course, you were an untrained novice, of course, back then.
Oh,
but
yeah.
When did you begin noticing, hey, wait a minute, something's not right here. I'm not feeling good about what I'm experiencing. What he promised is not what is being delivered. I mean, how did that begin to unfold?
Yeah. So what happened was that, as I mentioned, it was real fast and furious. And there's a lot of intensity in the beginning of a trauma bond. And I noticed that about 6 months in, the threatening really started and the coercive control started with, I want to get married. And I was like, well, I don't want to get married. I'm 23 years old. Well, if you don't marry me, I'm not going to date you. And just this constant threatening. And I was like, okay, well, I guess this guy just really loves me. I'm going to do what he says. But then it was always the goalpost is moving. If you're not going to have children with me, I'm not going to marry you. I'm not ready to have children yet, right? So he was plowing through my boundaries. I couldn't have any needs. It was all about what he wanted when he wanted it. And his rage was so intense. I was no match for it. Even though I'm a strong girl, I'm from Brooklyn, but I couldn't match his rage. And so I just noticed myself constantly acquiescing and placating him about these very big decisions.
You know, it's amazing to me that some individuals say, well, one of the ways that I can get you on my team is I can scream and rage and come at you really hard. And that's going to work. And I guess what you're saying is short term. Yeah, I guess it does because it's so overpowering and intimidating. Yes, long term, yes, that's a terrible strategy for building a relationship, isn't it?
It's terrible. And, you know, and the problem with it, and I write about this, is that the extreme rage and the extreme control, but then combined with the extreme love bombing, right? It's causes confusion. So it's like, which one is it? Is he good or is he bad? Well, I'm just going to go with that he's good because I want to love him.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, there was just a whole lot of excitement going on there too. Now, when you would attempt to call him out, you know, this isn't working for me. How was that received?
Not very well. I always say his rage was like a tsunami. I mean, I'm laughing, but it's not funny. If I dared, again, because I am a pretty vocal, independent person, even though I was a young girl, if I dared to express a need, set a boundary, forget it. It was just, the rage was just ferocious. I was met with such disparaging remarks, such extreme vitriol. I would just cave. I'm like, okay, you win. Yeah. You win.
Okay. And then I guess over time you found that it just kept whittling away and whittling away and whittling away at your sense of well-being.
Yes. Yes. Very much so. Very much so.
One of the things I mentioned is narcissists actually need you to feel worthless.
Yeah.
Somehow to them, it's a zero sum game. Well, if you have worth, that somehow diminishes me. And so I have to have all of it. You get none. Walk us through as you, as the shine of the early relationship began to wear off. And then as you began seeing, you know, I think I've got myself into a trap here that I don't know how to get out of. I'm assuming you had the two kids by then. And what was that like for you? And what did that do to you emotionally?
Yeah. So, you know, our life was going along, you know, and like this sort of relationship often is, to the outer world, it looks great. It looks like a fairy tale, right? I have this big house and all these, this help, and I'm dressed well and I can spend whatever I want. But then behind the gate, I really couldn't be my own person. And it was very, very confusing for me. And then, of course, you start to add children into the mix, right? So then I'm highly focused on them, and then I'm running my house. And so the whole time I'm kind of trying to keep him at bay and manage him, but still trying to keep our lives afloat. And that's why I went into therapy, because that's what also inspired me to become a therapist, because I believe that therapy during that time had saved me, because I was so confused and so overwhelmed and really quite fearful that I was like, I got to get myself into therapy because I have no idea what I'm doing here.
And by the way, I mean, you're a therapist now, obviously, and you have been for a while. And same with me. I always consider it to be a privilege when people come and they say, you know, I've got to get my norms reestablished. And I would feel like I'm standing on hallowed ground. It's like, well, thank you for having the confidence in me. Let's see where we can go. What kind of realizations began gelling on the inside of your mind during that segment of time?
I think what I started to realize was that, you know, my ex-husband and I were supposedly in love, but this wasn't the type of love that I wanted. You know, I wanted to be heard and valued and respected. And I really was feeling like an object just to have and to hold, like a trophy wife. And I was really feeling like that. And I wasn't feeling safe. I was very fearful of him. And then really his drug addiction is what just destroyed us and our family. His drug addiction just became so, so extreme and so out of control that his behavior just became more and more and more erratic. The more drugs he took, the less safe I felt, the more insecure I felt.
When you saw the movie, and it was years later, and by the way, yeah. I understand that you were actually a consultant to Margot Robbie about yeah. the character and all. So how did it feel? I'm going to be honest with you. My wife and I started seeing, we walked out.
Yeah.
Because it was just so like.
So extreme. Yeah.
It was the depiction of the condescension and the way that women in particular were used and all of this was just, it was too much for me. How did you feel going back and seeing all of that?
You know, there were so many emotions going on inside of me. I mean, first of all, my ex had first written a book. So when I first read the book, I was, you know, furious. I was like, oh my God, my life, like here I am. I go through this Greek tragedy of an existence. I get on the other side. I'm like, I'm good. And then he writes a book. So that my first experience was I threw a fit like I normally do. I let myself feel my emotions, threw myself in bed and then said, okay, time to get up. Now it's a movie. I'm just like, you've got to be kidding me, right?
So he actually contributed all of that?
He wrote the book. And then they bought the book to make the movie. So,
yet another way to make money, and I don't care.
Whatever. Well, he's a true grandiose agentic narcissist, right? He knows how to make things happen. So I was, of course, you know, feeling so conflicted, so strange inside. But again, I was in therapy. And so I was processing a lot and actually doing a lot of dream therapy around it, which I think really helped me. And then at one point, because this was when I went back to school, I just said to myself, after driving myself crazy, I said, Nadine, this is bigger than you. You have to surrender. Like, you can't control this. And I did that. And then I went to see the movie at a private screening with my husband, and we watched the movie. And after it was over, I was like, you know what? Wasn't that bad, because the way they portrayed me was a young girl who was in love with him, who was a good mother, I was okay with. I already knew all the other stuff.
Yeah.
So none of that shocked me. And luckily, I had always been very honest with my children, who were teenagers at the time. So they were very prepared for it too. But there were so many emotions for so many years. But luckily, I've been processing them and been in therapy forever.
Yeah, yeah. Now, when you finally broke off with him, was it really ugly? Or was it just kind of like, okay, the time has come and let's do that? Or what was that like for you?
Well, they show a scene in the movie, which isn't a correct chronological order, but what happens with our relationship was that when his drug addiction was so extreme that I said to him, I'm not going to sit here and watch you kill yourself, because that's just like, I can't do it anymore. So you either need to go to rehab or I'm leaving you. And he went crazy and threw my clothing and jewelry and lit them in the fire on fire, like threw them in the fire, lit them on fire, and was screaming, going nuts. And, but I went into the closet and I said, God, give me the strength to do this, please, because I need to do this. And I did it. And then there was a scene where he's, you know, where he said he was going to take my daughter. We got into a struggle. He kicked me. But luckily, my mother had told me to call the police and tell them I was going home I was going to be in a domestic violence situation. And I did. And I called the police and they came and he got arrested. The good news was he did go to rehab.
Okay.
And he came back. But I was out of love with him at that point. And then about 10, 11 months later, he got arrested on 11 counts of money laundering. So I felt safe. So I left.
Okay.
Because I knew he couldn't hurt me anymore once he had an ankle bracelet.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
My goodness.
So what? Yeah, it wasn't just a see you later. No.
By the way, the book Run Like Hell, is it out? It's out now. Is it available mm-hmm. to the general public? Mm-hmm. Okay, because I know I was able to get
a manuscript. Yeah, it was published. Yeah, it was published January 9th this year.
Okay. It's out and on Amazon and all the different places and.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I want to read a quote here that you put in there, and because I know this is something that so many people have asked themselves. You mentioned that you spent countless moments wondering, why me? Why did I go through a traumatic first marriage that almost killed me? And
Yeah.
one of the things that happens in a healthy growth reaction to that is you go through this sense of agony.
Yes.
Not what does it tell me about him? I mean, yeah, you're going to look at that, but then what does it tell me about me? What was in there? What
Yeah.
was that experience like for you to have that personal encounter with yourself?
Yeah, that was a very, very important moment in my life, and one of the reasons why I wrote my book was because back then we didn't really talk about narcissism and trauma bonds like we do today, right? So people's therapist said to me, "You're codependent and he's an addict." Now, so what I did is I got very reflective and said, "Oh my God, I'm codependent." And I actually went away to a clinic called the Caron Foundation in Pennsylvania for a week. I checked myself in and I learned about boundaries and, how to build back my sense of self and what comprises healthy relationships. And so it was really life-saving for me, just to take that time to actually reorganize myself inside and learn about myself, learn about the fact that I was people-pleasing and accommodating and all that sort of stuff. So with that being said, and I don't even think we were talking about attachment patterns back then. But then, through, of course, my own therapy and continued scholarly work, I've learned about my attachment patterns. I've learned about my family of origin. And I've been able to put together a picture of myself, right? My internal world. And what do I think? What do I feel? But really, I think the most important thing is that I learned how to connect back to my authentic self, because your sense of self gets stripped when you're in a trauma bond. But then, now what made me write my book was also too, was that those labels weren't enough. There was so much more going on. I
I
wasn't
want to
simply
know what all the
codependent.
behind the scenes stuff is attached to it as
Yeah.
well.
Yeah. Like there was so much going on because he wasn't just an addict and I wasn't codependent. Right now, I know that he was severely narcissistic, right? A whole personality disorder that nobody was teaching me about.
I'd like for you to be aware of my video courses. One is entitled Ready, Set, Connect. Now, narcissists are quite capable of throwing you off balance, so this course keeps you focused on the skills and the mindset that are necessary for positive connections. And inside the course, we have various modules that, inside each module are lessons, and each lesson contains a video, written documents, and then questions that go along with it. We'll discuss things like how to have good conflict resolution skills, building empathy, how to be the authentic self that you need to be. If you're interested in enrolling, you can go to our website, survivingnarcissism.tv, click the link for courses. You'll find Ready, Set, Connect there, as well as the others. I hope that you would find them to be quite helpful.
And now back to Surviving Narcissism with Dr. Carter.
Well,
Right?
interestingly, I began my Surviving Narcissism channel in 2018, so 6 years ago. And frankly, it was, I call it lightning in a bottle, frankly, because we were talking about it some, but not a lot. Of course, in the last several years, more and more has
Right.
come out about that. You went to graduate school,
Yeah.
and you wound up becoming a specialist in trauma bonding. And Nadine, I can't say strongly enough, way to go. Go get them like that. I just so admire somebody that says, well, I'm going to take my really rotten experiences, I'm going to grow, I'm going to learn, and then I'm going to become what we refer to as the wounded healer. I've had my wounds, and I'm going to talk with you about yours, and
Yeah.
let's grow together. So
Yeah.
let's kind of go into some of the stuff that you've learned and you've teach now and you
Sure.
address in your therapy. How does a trauma bond begin? What are some of the key ingredients that we have to watch for?
Sure. So a trauma bond begins with promises of hope and usually a lot of love bombing. Usually, like I explained in my first marriage, it's fast and furious. There's a lot of chemistry. There's a lot of promises of forever. There's a lot of adoration and flattery. The person might want to really monopolize all your time. So it's almost like you feel kind of this obsession with each other. And there are two conditions that must exist for a trauma bond to exist. And the first one is a power imbalance. And so power imbalance can happen for many reasons. It can be somebody has more resources than you do. Some just the very nature, just the very fact that you love somebody, they can have power over you. And then also power can be gained by the partner when they're dominating, threatening, and intimidating, that you fear them.
Well, and one of the common things that I hear is particularly when kids enter in, well, if you think you're going to break off from me, then you've got another thing coming. And so there's the worry about what are you going to do, not just to me, but to my children. And that becomes part of the power dynamic.
Yes. Yep. Yep. And also it's created by whoever makes the most decisions in the household about car, career, homes, etc. And the second thing is intermittent abuse or intermittent reinforcement. But I like to call it intermittent abuse because it's kind of easier for the general public to understand.
For our public, explain what you mean by that.
Yeah. So what it is that in a trauma bond, there are extreme times of love bombing and care and great sex and just intense love and generosity and helpfulness. Sometimes I would say about, let's say 30% of the time, but 70% of the time, the partner's very controlling, dominating, intimidating, threatening, and cruel. And so what the research shows is that's the extremity of those behaviors causes extreme feelings inside of us, that's actually what creates the bond.
Yeah. You would, a lot of folks would think, well, what that creates is the desire to run, but it's not quite that simplistic either.
Right. And I put this in my book about the animal trainers who were very kind to their animals that they were training, or the animal trainers that were cruel and kind. And what the research shows that those animals with the intermittent abuse bonded 230% more to their trainer. And when I read that, I was like, okay, this makes sense.
Did you ever actually run experience? Because when I was in undergraduate, I ran experience with rats, and we did that very same thing. And I mean, we had to write up all of our stuff, and it's like, it's a real deal, isn't it? Did you do that in your graduate training?
No, I didn't have to do that. I just did it in all my research. I think it was Donald Dutton's research. And I just was like, wow, okay. So those are the two things that need to exist for a trauma bond to exist. Those are two conditions.
Okay, the power differential and the intermittent abuse.
That's right.
Yeah, because as soon as it gets awful, then it can become wonderful again. And then, of course, there's the gaslighting that's all intermixed in there. Well, maybe I'm the confused one here and all of that.
Yes. And also the hard part is that your terrorizer becomes your soother.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. They're the only one that can soothe you until they say it's okay. Then you can breathe again.
Now, in your book, you talk about some of the key ingredients that is part of the perpetuator, the narcissistic personality that creates the trauma bond. What are some of those that we would look at?
So you mean like the gaslighting?
Yeah. You mentioned the pathological lover and the cluster B personality.
Oh, yeah. So So I don't just call them a narcissist. But I call them a pathological lover because pathological means mentally unwell. Mm-hmm. And I believe that anybody that's going to harm and betray somebody they're supposedly going to love.
That's not love.
That's right. They're mentally unwell. And so chapter two is called, Is He Twisted or Tender? I love that title. And it describes the pathological lover who has usually a cluster B personality disorder, narcissism, antisocial personality disorder, histrionic or borderline. Right. We know those are called dramatic and erratic.
Right.
Because, and especially if you're in a relationship with them, you feel that. But they have a lot of other things going on. They can have substance abuse. They can have a compulsive process disorder like sex or gambling. They can have impulsivity issues. And then they can be psychopathic, meaning they're very cold, very, very callous, totally unemotional, no empathy at all. And then they are very Machiavellian, meaning they're highly manipulative.
You know, Nadine, when you talk, of course, as a therapist, I'm hearing that what they have on the inside, as far as peace,
yeah,
and calmness and rationale, it ain't there.
It's
it,
not
it's
there.
Empty. And as a result, what they do is they put all of the pressure on that person in front of them.
Yes.
The way I put it is their sense of well-being is externally based. And then if people don't do it, then I'll do it through money. I'll do it through drugs. I'll do it through sex. I'll do it through alcohol,
yeah.
whatever that
yeah.
outside stimulation might be.
Right.
And I guess over time you began realizing, yeah, and I was one of those outside stimulations that he had to have. And of course,
yes.
we have a term for that. It's called narcissistic supply. And
right.
so that's all
right.
part of what's going on inside of
yes.
that individual who becomes the abuser, even though they want you to think, well, I'm all powerful. No, you're actually
yes.
empty.
Right, right. They're very empty. They're very empty, right. And they're very emotionally dysregulated, right, as we would say.
Yeah,
Right? They can't
yeah.
They can't control themselves. I mean, they're really like, they're not full functioning adults.
Not even close. Yeah,
no.
Yeah. I just call it the pre-adolescent thinker. They're just
Yeah.
like a kid that
Yeah.
just throws a temper tantrum.
Yeah. And then I go back to, you know, what I said in the beginning. And so people will say, okay, but what is this person? And I say, again, they will exploit, harm, betray, and use anybody to get their needs met for money, power, pleasure, and status. And it just doesn't matter what it looks like.
That makes so much sense. And I mean, it's so clear when you just put it succinctly like that.
Yeah.
Now, what about the person who has become bonded?
Yes.
Now, what do we see in that individual that makes them, for lack of a better way to put it, a prime candidate?
Yeah. So, you know, so first of all, I always want to say this, that anybody and everyone can fall prey to this
Thank
person.
you. Yeah. In other words, don't even think that that
Right.
it's all about you, because it's not.
It's not like our wonderful friend Dr. Romney says, it's not you, right, in her book.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
it's like, no, anybody and everybody can fall prey. And so I wanted to take the stigma off of the victim, because they feel so much shame around it. And so what my research showed in 2018, I read Sandra L. Brown's book called Women Who Love Psychopaths.
Okay.
And her research stated that these particular pathological people prey on women. I'm just going to say women for right now, even though we know it can be men too, that score very high in certain personality traits.
Okay.
Okay. So there's something called the Big Five personality traits. And
Very familiar.
anybody
Ocean.
can Google it, right? Oh, you know, openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, neuroticism, and agreeableness. Her research said that women who score very high in agreeableness, meaning they're loyal, tolerant, altruistic, and very conscientious, meaning they're very organized and driven and have integrity, are perfect prey for these men.
Yeah.
Because those beautiful traits, that if a woman comes to me, I'm not going to therapize them out of her, but they get weaponized
Yeah.
in this relationship.
One of the things I tell people who are of that nature, it's like, well, the biggest problem you have, if we're going to say you're guilty of anything, you don't think like a narcissist.
Yeah.
Yeah. In other words, you bring these particular ingredients to
Exactly.
the equation, and it's like, well, I'm going to be trustworthy, or I want to be, give people the benefit of the doubt, or I want to show kindness and loyalty. And at their best, those are wonderful characteristics to have. And the narcissist is thinking, oh man, I can so use this. And that's what I mean. You're not thinking like the narcissist, good for you. And yet at the same time, unfortunately,
yes.
we have to build in a certain amount of pessimism when those folks show up.
Yes, we do. We do. And so when I read her research, that was another aha moment for me. I said, oh my God, she's finally explaining what I knew when they told me I was codependent.
Yeah.
didn't know it, but something inside, I was like, okay, I don't set boundaries. I get it. I got to learn to say no. But I think there's something more here.
Well, and there we go back to what you said a few minutes ago about one of the key ingredients is the power differential. You can be thinking equality and availability and goodness, and they can be thinking, okay, this is something that's going to make them vulnerable to me, and they don't know it yet, but they're going to be in service to me before this thing is done. And it's insidious that somebody would approach someone that they quote love, because actually it's not love at all.
I know.
And take your best characteristics and work it against you. But that's exactly what can happen in these power relationships.
Exactly. And so then I also explain, you know, there are women who have had a lot of developmental trauma, of course, that can fall prey. They have different traits that they need to learn about. They're more low agreeableness and high conscientiousness. Then there are women that are more dependent. So I just really kind of say to people, these are all the personality traits. Figure out which ones you have so you know which ones can be weaponized against you. And also, it's just good, like we just said, just to understand yourself.
Yeah. Now, what's the net result when all of this has happened, the person in your position, I mean, what does it do to you? I mean, you talk about having anger or rage or hypervigilance and all. What does it do that takes you out of you being your best version of you?
Yeah. Well, it causes, I write about complex post-traumatic stress disorder, which is a relational trauma, right? It's a relational trauma that can occur when between a parent and a child, or it can occur in a trauma bond. And that's you get a set of mind-body symptoms. You get loss of self. As we know, they just strip away your sense of self. You can get depression, hopelessness, helplessness, anxiety, hypervigilance. But I want to talk about something that's really particular to trauma bonds is the cognitive dissonance.
Okay, explain that to us.
So because the person has a good side and a bad side, or we like to call it masks, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, what happens is that throughout the relationship with them, you start to think. So cognitive dissonance is the mental discomfort from holding two opposing definitions, right? So just so they know that. Is he good? Is he bad? Am I good? Am I bad? Is he crazy? Am I crazy? Is the relationship good? Is the relationship bad? Constant cognitive dissonance on so many different levels, ping-ponging in your brain.
What am I supposed to believe?
Right. Causing total confusion, putting you in a fog, and you can't think clearly, or as we say in therapy, you have lose your executive functioning.
Yeah.
And that's
the therapy is all about getting that executive functioning back.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it's about. So that's the glue. So you have all these depression, anxiety, anger. It depends on who you are, how it manifests. Then you have the cognitive dissonance and you have the loss of self. And so if you're already having all these symptoms and you're in this trauma bond, you can see how hard it is to get out.
Yeah. Now, Nadine, as we take it to the finish line, what kind of things can we watch for and hope for as a person says, okay, I'm growing, I'm getting away from this, there's light at the end of this tunnel. How do we know that that bond is being broken?
Well, the bond can break in many different ways. It can break because you've just had it. You can't take it, that you don't know who you are anymore. You've just filled with fear, so you want to leave. A lot of times women build confidence outside the relationship and they leave, but something inside of them, I call it the last straw, breaks. And then they're like, I'm done. And what I tell them is that that's great and that's wonderful. I never pressure anybody to leave. I just am with them till they make that decision, because it's really their choice. But then I say to them, now it's time for you to wear the mask. Don't let them see you coming.
Okay, what do you mean by that then?
Because you cannot tell this antagonistic, hostile, threatening person who wants to control you that you're going to leave.
Here's my game plan.
That's not going to go well.
Yeah.
So you have to really strategize, document, do everything behind the scenes to get ready to make your exit.
And then you also have the work to do once the relationship is finished as well.
Yeah.
In terms of recouping who you are, you know, we often talk about boundaries as if it means, okay, now you get to tell people no, but boundaries is so much more than that. It's about going back and redefining who you are and then living inside that, that definition. And that, that's the wonderful part of therapy when you get to go deeper and deeper into that space.
Yeah. And I write about this, that, you know, there is something called post-traumatic growth, and we can get better from pain and suffering because it does force us to be reflective and learn about ourselves and learn healthier ways of being. And it is really possible. I mean, I'm living proof, right?
Well, and you know, Nadine, I talk about, you know, some folks will say, well, I came out okay in spite of what happened to me. And I'll take it a little bit further and we'll say, well, you came out okay because of what happened to you. Not that we're going to say that was wonderful, because it's not, but it's like, you know what? It forced me to have to think in ways that I may never have done before. And, and you've gone through that agonizing, and you've gone through the, who am I kind of questioning. And, the intensity can be so strong that, the commitment that goes along with it, that's going to lead you towards the good side, is also quite strong.
Yeah, because it is so painful to have that promise of love and hope broken. And I know for myself and for my women I work with, they're like, I will do anything to never feel that again.
Yeah.
What do I have to learn? What do I have to do? How can I grow to never have to feel that way again? Pain is a good motivator.
Well, actually, I say pain is a gift that nobody even wants, but it's if you listen to what it's trying to tell you, it's like, in your case, run like hell.
Yes, in my case.
Hey, listen, Nadine, I am so thankful that we were able to connect and we were able to have this conversation. And we're going to have some information below the video so people can know how to access your book and access who you are and where you're coming from and all like that. You've been through a lot, haven't you? It's you know, 35 years now down the road almost since you first started all of this. And it's like, and every decade that goes by, I hope I'm getting more and more into my wisdom and into my real self and who I need to be. And I, like you said, you're living proof of it.
Yeah. And I love my work, and I love being able to be of service. And to give back and to make meaning out of everything that I've endured. And I don't know, I like getting older. It's kind of cool.
Well, it has its privileges.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for who you are and for what you've done and for what you are continuing to accomplish. And thank you for being part of our Surviving Narcissism podcast here today, too.
Thank you so much. This was wonderful. So
okay. Well, it's been our privilege, and I wish you well. I hope we are able to cross paths again in the future.
Me too.
Thank you for listening. Surviving Narcissism is the product of many years of work done by Dr. Les Carter. Dr. Carter is a best-selling author and therapist with more than 40 years of experience, specializing in anger management and narcissistic personality disorder. You can find more content from Dr. Carter on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube at Surviving Narcissism, as well as on his website, survivingnarcissism.tv. Thank you for joining us for this week's podcast. We are so glad to have you on Team Healthy.